Suppose we should start, huh?
Yeah, I think everybody should be here that's supposed to be here.
We're going to bring the budget section committee meeting to order, and I'm hoping that all of you are having a great summer and have had a great spring. I know it's been very, very busy for me ever since the session ended. If I wasn't here today, I'd be driving the water truck for the sprayers, but this is important too. So with that, we'll call the meeting to order, and we'll start with the roll call.
Senators, Chairman Wanzek.
Here.
Beckedahl.
Here.
Dever.
Here.
Herbele. Grabinger.
Here.
Heckeman.
Here.
Hoag.
Here.
Holmberg. Klein. Krebsbach. Lee.
Present.
Mathern.
Aye.
Elke.
Here.
Poolman.
Here.
Robinson.
Aye.
Sorvog.
Here.
Wardner. Representatives, Vigasaw.
Here.
Anderson.
Here.
Beadle.
Here.
Ballou.
Here.
Bow. Boucher.
Here.
Brandenburg. Delzer.
Here.
Hansen.
Here.
Holman. Howe.
Here.
Kempenick.
Here.
Clemine.
Here.
Kreit.
Here.
Lauser.
Here.
Martinson.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Mock.
Here.
Munson. Nathy.
Here.
Nelson. Pollerts. Sanford.
Here.
Schatz.
Here.
Schmidt.
Here.
Schobinger. Mr. Chairman, there is a quorum of members present, and also Senators Holmberg, Klein, and Herbele, and Representatives Brandenburg, Holman, Munson, and Pollard notified our office that they would be absent today.
Okay. Thank you, Brady. Let me announce we also have Senator Shibley here attending as a member of the Legislative Council Management Staff, or Council, excuse me. Now I'd call on Brady to provide the review of supplementary rules of operation procedures for the legislative management.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the budget section. The first memorandum in your packets is number 21.9028.02000, and these are the supplementary rules of operation and procedure of the North Dakota Legislative Management, and these are the guidelines for the operation of the interim committees. These guidelines are very similar, almost exact, to what was in place last interim, so I will not go through each of these items, but I will review four of the most commonly questioned items on here. And first of all, under Section 2, which relates to the conduct of meetings, Subdivision C provides that approval of the Legislative Management Chairman is needed for using interactive video or teleconference for attendance at a Legislative Management meeting. Also, under the conduct of meetings, under Subdivision G, this provides that presenters at interim committee meetings are encouraged to submit electronic versions of testimony to our office, and what we will do with that electronic testimony is link it to the agenda and place it on the legislative branch website so committee members as well as members of the public can follow along using the electronic version. Section 3 relates to the jurisdiction of the committee, and I'll just point out two of the items in this area. First of all, in Subdivision B, this provides that a committee may not substantially expand a study or directive without prior approval of the Legislative Management Chairman. And Subdivision C provides that any legislation being considered by an interim committee must be heard at 2 meeting days unless that legislation is drafted by the Legislative Council staff. Mr. Chairman and members of the budget section, I will stop there and I will stand for any questions.
Excuse me. Are there any questions of Brady from the committee? Seeing none, we'll move on. We'll move into the 10.05 memorandum regarding the duties and responsibilities of the Budget Section Committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Budget Section, the next memorandum is number 21.9018.01000, and these are the duties and responsibilities of the Budget Section for the 2019-21 biennium. And the first section of the memorandum provides an overview of budget section, and as all the members are aware, Senate Bill number 2055 affected the budget section, and in that bill there were two major provisions. First, the bill established the membership of the budget section, and it provided that the budget section consists of the majority and minority leaders of the House and Senate, as well as the assistant majority and minority leaders, as well as the Speaker of the House and then the members of the House and Senate Appropriations Committees. Secondly, Senate Bill 2055 provided guidelines for budget section to use when considering a request made by a state agency. And those are the eight items that are listed in the first part of the memorandum that I will now go through. First of all, the budget section is to consider whether the request is for a specific purpose. It is to consider whether the request is for a specific amount of funds and for a specific time frame, not to continue beyond the end of the current biennium, whether the request conforms with legislative intent, whether the request is consistent with related statutory provisions, whether the request supports state priorities, whether the request improves state efficiencies and promotes effective state government, and also to consider if the request is for a new program, if that program does not extend beyond the current biennium, and finally to consider whether the request addresses a state emergency. The remaining part of the memorandum goes through the different duties that have been assigned to the budget section. And for the 2019-21 biennium, there were 71 duties assigned to the budget section, and those are organized into three different parts on this memorandum. First of all, duties 1 through 35, these are continuing duties that were acted on during the previous biennium by the budget section. And then duties 36 through 55 are existing duties, but the budget section did not act on those duties during the last interim. And finally, on page 6, starting at 56 and going through duty 71, these are new duties assigned to the budget section that are a result of legislation enacted by the 2019 Legislative Assembly. Mr. Chairman, that is my overview of this memorandum, and I will stand for any questions.
Are there any questions? Seeing none, we'll move on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the budget section. The next report that I will go through is the large purple book that is at each one of your desks, and that is the state budget actions for the 2019-21 biennium. And this report provides information regarding budget actions taken by the 2019 Legislative Assembly and provides information in several different areas. And you will see different tabs for different sections of this report. And the report is separated into 13 different sections. And if you're looking to find specific information, at the very start of the report, there is an index. And then most of the different sections also have indexes as well. I won't go into too much detail into the content of this, but I will explain what is included in this report and in each of the sections. First of all, in Section A, this is an executive summary of the report, and on page A1 there is a budgets, general fund budget summary in the top left-hand corner that details what the final legislative budget was for the 2019-21 biennium. And then the remaining parts of this section provide information regarding information that is included in the other sections of this report. It just provides a nice summary of the major highlights of the report. Going over into Section B, this includes information regarding general fund revenues and oil and gas tax revenues. And some of the key schedules included in here are comparisons to prior biennium general fund revenues, and also major tax and fee changes that were approved by the 2019 Legislative Assembly. There's also a schedule in this tab that provides information regarding supplemental and deficiency appropriations approved by the 2019 Legislative Assembly. There were several of those requests approved, and so those are detailed here on page B10. Going on to the next section, which is Section C, this provides information regarding both general fund and other funds appropriations. And starting out with the section, there is a summary that provides historical information on, it's on page C1, provides historical information regarding levels of general fund and other fund appropriations going back to 2007-09. And there's also information that, there are also schedules that provide comparisons for agency appropriations from the 2017-19 biennium to the 2019-21 biennium. On pages C7 and C9, there is also information regarding one-time appropriations approved by the Legislative Assembly, as well as contingent general fund appropriations that were approved. Beginning with Section D, this section starts to look at individual agency budgets. And for Section D, this details the budgets that were approved for each of the elected officials. On the first page of that section, there is an index that details each of the elected officials and what page their budget information is located on. The next three tabs, E, F, and G, provide information regarding elementary and secondary education as well as human services. Some of the key schedules that are included in these tabs include the state per pupil payments, as well as higher education tuition rates, higher education enrollments, and then key human services programs. In tab H, this section has the detail for agency budgets that are not highlighted in any other sections. And at the very beginning, there is an index of the different agencies that are sorted alphabetically. And then once you get into the agency budget detail, those are organized by budget number. Going into section I, this is the capital construction section. And in this section, there's information regarding the new capital projects that were approved by the Legislative Assembly, as well as extraordinary repairs. And then there's also information regarding the outstanding capital bond payments that the state owes. In section J, this section provides information regarding state employees, and it includes information regarding the costs of state employee salary and benefit increases. And there's also a schedule that provides information regarding historical increases or salary increases provided to state employees. In section K, this is a section that's dedicated to large information technology projects. There's a schedule that details each of the approved projects, and there's also information regarding how those projects were ranked by SciTech. In section L, there are 25 trust fund analyses of major state funds, and these trust funds are all based on the approved 2019-21 legislative budget. And finally, in section M, this section provides historical data. There is information that provides comparisons of appropriations to personal income. And then there's also information regarding historical funding for state school aid and then aid to political subdivisions. Mr. Chairman, that is my overview of this report, and I will stand for any questions.
Any questions of Brady? I'm seeing none.
Mr. Chairman, the next item I will go through is a memorandum. It's number 21.9003.01000. And this is the 2019-21 biennium oil and gas tax revenue allocation flow chart. And this chart is based on the 2019 legislative forecast for the 2019-21 biennium oil and gas tax prices and productions. And just as a reminder, the legislative forecast was for production levels going from 1.4 to 1.44 million barrels per day during the biennium, and then oil prices averaging $48.50 per barrel the first year of the biennium and $48 per barrel the second year of the biennium. At the top of the chart, you can see the total estimated collections, oil and gas tax collections, are $4.851 billion for the 2019-21 biennium. And then if you look on the left side, you can see how the oil and gas production tax would be allocated based on that amount. And then on the right side is how the oil extraction tax would be allocated. Now, in each of the different boxes, you'll notice that there is a number associated with that box. And that relates to the information located on page 2 of the memorandum. The page 2, if you look, the number will provide the additional information regarding the fund or the allocation destination of that item. Some of the numbers you will see have shaded boxes, and those represent constitutional allocations. In the bottom left-hand portion of the chart is the state share of oil revenues, which is commonly referred to as the state buckets. And you can see in each of the different boxes it lists how much would be allocated to that, or how much is designated for that fund, and then behind that how much would be allocated to that fund based on the legislative forecast. And then in the lower right-hand corner of the memorandum is information providing the total estimated allocations, and it just goes down and lists each fund separately. So, Mr. Chairman, unless there are any questions on this memorandum, I will move on to the next item.
Any questions? I'm not seeing any, Brady. Continue.
Mr. Chairman and members of the budget section, the next item I will go through is the large chart, which is the estimated revenue sources and distributions for major state funds. Some people do refer to this as the map of the world. And just a couple comments on this chart. First of all, this chart only includes major revenue sources and funds that affect multiple agencies or have a major impact on state agencies. It does not include any funds or revenue sources that are specific to an agency. So for example, you probably hear comments about the Game and Fish Fund. Well, that fund just receives funding only for the Game and Fish Department and a few other select agencies. It doesn't have a major impact on...
...statement for the general fund. This is based on the March 2019 legislative forecast, so the forecast that you adopted in 2019 legislative session, and then actual revenues that we've seen come in since that time. So that March forecast actually included actual revenues only through the month of January at the time that it was prepared and adopted, because we didn't have final February revenues at that point. So now we have final February, March, April, and May revenues. We have four more months of actuals, so now we can track how that adopted forecast is comparing to those actuals. And so far we've seen the actual general fund revenues be a little over $50 million in excess of that legislative forecast. So that's what's reflected here. We have our beginning balance of $65 million, and then we have monies that were appropriated in the prior biennium but allowed to be carried forward because of in-progress capital construction or IT projects to give us our beginning balance. And then we have revenues collected to date, and then that $410 million of remaining revenues is what's based on the March forecast, so that would be for the month of June. It gives us a total of about $4.7 billion at the time that the legislative budget work was wrapped up. That estimate for total revenues for this biennium was about $4.6 billion. So it's about 53 million higher than what was estimated at the time that you adjourned. Then we have the legislative appropriations, which are primarily what was appropriated in the 2017 session, with the exception of the supplemental appropriations, which are ones that you authorized for the current biennium. And then the estimated turnback, which is still the number that you were using at the time that you finalized the legislative budget actions. We won't know that number until sometime in July when we close out the biennium. So based on those available revenues and those authorized expenditures, we have an estimated balance of about $400 million, and then a transfer to the Budget Stabilization Fund of about $338 million. And that that compares to about $285 million, which was the estimate when you were finishing your budget action. And that, again, is based on that $50 million excess revenues that we've realized in those months since that forecast was adopted. I do want to point out that there is the potential for that number to be higher, because we don't know yet what June revenues will be. And also, I just came from a meeting of the Legacy Fund and Budget Stabilization Fund Advisory Council or Committee, and the report from the State Investment Board from Dave Hunter indicated that that transfer of legacy earnings, which in the legislative forecast that was adopted was $300 million, that transfer will likely be around $450 million. So that is not taken into account here, because in this status statement we are using the legislative forecast for that remaining month. So if that number is $450 million, that would mean that we would be exceeding the legislative estimate by about $200 million, counting both the overage in general fund revenues we've had so far and that $150 million of excess legacy earnings, which would give us a transfer to the Budget Stabilization Fund of somewhere around $500 million, likely. Adding that to the balance that's currently in the Budget Stabilization Fund, which I list at the bottom of this page, of $113 million, that would give us a balance of somewhere over $600 million, $615 million, somewhere in that range. So that seems like the likely scenario. We won't know those final numbers until sometime after June 30. The month of June stays open on the accounting system until close to the end of July, actually, like the 26th, so that those final transfers can be determined, and then when the month is closed out, we'll know exactly what that amount will be. But just to make you all aware, it's likely that we'll be looking at a balance somewhere over $600 million in the Budget Stabilization Fund as we close out this biennium. And then moving on to the other funds that are listed at the bottom of this page, these are from the state accounting system. So the current legacy fund balance, as reflected in PeopleSoft, not recognizing earnings that have accrued and would be recognized as the biennium is closed out, is about $6.4 billion. The Foundation Aid Stabilization Fund, a little over $400. The Tax Relief Fund is currently at $200 million. That will go down a little bit as we close out the bonding because there's still a transfer of about $17 million that was authorized to go to the Department of Human Services. That has not taken place yet. That will take place sometime in this month. And then the Strategic Investment Improvements Fund, current balance is about $930 million. Those oil tax funds that receive oil tax allocations have grown a little faster than what was anticipated in the March 2019 legislative forecast. So far, we've exceeded that forecast by about $46 million in terms of oil revenues. So, Mr. Chairman, if there are no questions on that page, I will move ahead to page 2.
We have a question, Joe. Senator Beckedahl.
Hey, Mr. Chairman. And Joe, in terms of the revenue that comes in when you close out the books in July, which you normally do for the biennium, but revenue for the oil and gas receipts comes in a different cycle. Isn't that a September 1 to August 30 cycle in the biennium? How do you account for the lag in the oil revenues coming in and still close out the books in July?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Beckedahl, that's a good point. There is that lag because of the month of production and the month of payment of those taxes and the receipt by the state. So those are, I got to think that through. The final month of production for revenues that are recognized this biennium will be May production? I'm looking for a nod from the back row. So May production, thank you, Becky Keller. May production and July revenues, that would be applied back to the month of June. So production that would still take place in June, although it's in the current biennium, would not be recognized until the subsequent biennium.
Any other Representative Nathy?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joe, we just received an email the other day from Council on some of the June numbers production from oil and gas, and I know you gave us an estimate as far as where budget stabilization fund will be in the neighborhood of 615. Where do you see SIF will be? As far as I can figure right now, according at the end of May, SIF will be about 663. Do you have any idea or projections where SIF will end up at the with the final numbers, kind of a ballpark figure at the end of June?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Representative Nathy, our estimates right now based on actuals that we've, actuals through May, so still an estimate for the month of June, is an unobligated balance in SIF of about $866 million.
Thank you.
Continue, Joe.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'll move on to page 2, which is the monthly comparison.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Representative Delzer.
Say, before we go on, though, we do need to recognize with SIF that we set it up that anything above $755 million for the biennium goes to the infrastructure loan program. So there isn't going to be a whole lot of extra money going into SIF.
And Mr. Chairman, just to clarify on Representative Delzer's point, that the balance that I referenced was the total balance, which it would include monies that were carried into the biennium and monies that don't come from oil and gas taxes but from oil royalties. So I think the current amount of oil and gas tax revenues that would be over the $750 million threshold is somewhere around 15 to 20 million, that would be available to go to the infrastructure fund rather than into SIF. So, Mr. Chairman, moving on to page 2, this is the monthly look at our revenues tracking to forecast that you all see in the monthly newsletter that we distribute. This is the first time that we have compared those revenues to the March 2019 legislative forecast. Other comparisons we've always done based on the original 2017 forecast, and now that we are this close to the end of the biennium and we have a more current forecast, it seems like this is probably the number that you're most interested in, how we're tracking compared to that forecast that you adopted most recently. So overall, there's monthly variances as we iron out that kind of cash flow that we try to project for when those revenues will come in the door. Sometimes those are skewed significantly month to month based on the timing of tax filings. So I think it's not as important to focus on that monthly number as it is on the biennium to date. So I'll just go to that far right side of the page. And tracking very close to the sales tax forecast, under very slightly, less than 0.5%, slightly under in motor vehicle excise taxes. Both of those were written up significantly from the original 2017 forecast to recognize the overages that we were seeing throughout the biennium. So tracking very, very close there. Individual is slightly above forecast, again, a variance of less than 1%. Corporate income tax has been just kind of a wild card the entire biennium, where it has continued to exceed estimates with some difficulty in determining why that's the case, when it seems like there are operating losses that are carried forward for a lot of the major taxpayers that should be offsetting that liability, but estimated payments continue to come in and exceed those estimates. So even based on the most current March 2019 forecast, we are exceeding that corporate income tax projection by a significant margin, by almost 30%. So overall, we are exceeding that forecast by a little over a percent. So really tracking fairly close, a variance there, a positive variance of about $53 million. And that's through the month of May. We won't know actuals for June until I'm here before you again in your September meeting, or October, whenever that meeting is, Mr. Chairman. The next page is a comparison, the same information, but compared back to the same point in the 2015-17 biennium, so through the month of May, 2017. And I think the important thing to note on this is that if you go to the very bottom on the right side, it shows that we are under that comparison by about 10%. But if you look to the third line from the bottom, where there was significant transfers in the 15-17 biennium from the Budget Stabilization Fund and other funds, that our shortage is all related to those transfers, where those transfers in the current biennium are $900 million less than what they were in the 15-17 biennium. So if you back that out, we're really about $400 million over in our other revenue types. Mr. Chairman, if there are no questions on that, I'll move on to page 4.
And are there any questions up to this point? I don't see any.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, this is a report that you ask for at each meeting. And it shows the history of the Tobacco Settlement Trust Fund. Those bottom three lines in that schedule show what was received during the 2017-19 biennium. April of 18, June of 18, and then April of 2019. Those total about $74 million in total. If you recall, for the current biennium, the allocation of those monies was changed so that 55% went to the Community Health Trust Fund, 45% to the Water Development Trust Fund, and none to the Common Schools Trust Fund. So you can see those allocations in those columns to the right. And then at the bottom of the page is in a note regarding how those monies will be allocated in the upcoming biennium, which will be 100% to the Community Health Trust Fund and none to the Water Development Trust Fund or the Common Schools Trust Fund. And the estimate for next biennium is about $36 million that would be coming into the Tobacco Settlement Trust Fund and then allocated according to those allocation percentages. Mr. Chairman, if there are no questions on that, I'll move on to page 5, which is a report that is required at each of your meetings based on North Dakota Century Code Section 542727, which requires that every agency, every executive branch agency, that is submitting a federal application for a grant over $25,000 has to file with the Office of Management and Budget some information that lays out the description of the grant and the matching requirements and that type of thing. So that is what I've got to present to you today. We have some detailed information on each of these. If anybody would like it, I'd be happy to send that out to you. The first request is from the Adjutant General, And I should say the first report, because these aren't really requests. There's no approval required. It's just a reporting mechanism where it's let you're aware of those potential grants that are coming in. So the first one's from the Adjutant General, where they have submitted a grant application for improvements at the Veterans Cemetery relating to the interment of cremated remains. And it would be about a I just received information this morning that that amount of $1.2 million was revised to $1.3 million. There is no match requirement. The state will incur some design costs of around $72,000, but those would be reimbursed through the federal grant. So there's no matching requirements on that one. The second one is from the Adjutant General, about $1.3 million. And this is for the Department of Emergency Services, where they will be the recipient agency for a federal grant. The North Dakota Association of Counties will actually administer the grant, but they can't receive it because they're not a state agency. This will relate to the 911 network and software and training. And there will be no state match. Any match requirements will be met locally. The next item is from the Department of Agriculture, about $310,000. This relates to a food safety outreach program. And again, there's no match requirements for that one. The next one is a $500,000 grant request submitted by the Department of Public Instruction to rewrite guidelines for gifted programming. Again, there's no state match required on that one. The next one from the Department of Public Instruction at $35 million is a competitive grant that that they've submitted to advance literacy programs for children through grade 12. There's no state match requirement for that one. The final two are from the Department of Transportation. The first one of $3.7 million is to test automated driving systems in collaboration with the Upper Great Plains Transportation Institute. There's a 20% match that they are meeting from their appropriated funds. And the second one from the Department of Transportation of $40 million would be for potentially four-laning of U.S. Highway 85 from Watford to the Teddy Roosevelt National Park North Unit. This is a competitive grant. It would require a combination of state and local match if it was awarded. The final item on this page is a follow-up. When an agency does receive approval that they are going to receive the federal funds that are, as I reported above, then there's a follow-up where they indicate that the grant was actually awarded. So this bottom item is a report from the Attorney General indicating that this grant that was applied for in June of 2018 and reported to you last, at sometime after that time, probably at your September meeting, this was a grant that related to multi-jurisdictional task forces relating to heroin and other opioid enforcement activities. Of $946,000, that grant was awarded, and you can see the period of the grant on that report. Mr. Chairman, if there are no questions on that, I will move ahead to the next item, which is on page 6 of the handout, and this is also a statutorily required report on anything that's determined to be a fiscal irregularity, and that is identified, it's defined in code as any bonuses, cash incentive awards, or temporary salary adjustments that are paid to state employees. The heading indicates that it's from the time period covered under this report is December 2018 to April of 2019. That looks to be a typo, and it should actually say through May of 2019, because there are items on here from May, since that is the most recent month that's been closed out. So, Mr. Chairman, they're just listed here for your information. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, I won't go through the list. The very last page is also related to this statutorily required report, and it lists severance pay. Included in severance pay is the voluntary separation incentive program that was offered by most state agencies in the last biennium in an effort to reduce the number of state employees and find efficiencies. This lists the number of individuals by agency that submitted VSIP applications that were approved in the final program for the months of January, February, March, April, and May. This is not the complete picture of those of that voluntary separation incentive program, because there were about 225 individuals statewide that took that program and left state employment. And the program was open for months prior to January, and those numbers were already reported to you at a prior meeting. So, Mr. Chairman, that completes my presentation. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
Are there any questions of Mr. Morissette? Any questions on what he presented? Another job well done. No questions. Okay. We'll move on to the 1035 presentation from the Department of Mineral Resources. There, here comes Lynn.
Morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Lynn Helms from the Department of Mineral Resources. You should have a handout that has a nice fall photograph of the Killdeer Mountains on the front of it. Even though summer has finally arrived, fall's never far away in North Dakota. So I've got a couple of things to cover with you.
If I might ask, has everybody got that report? We didn't get ours up at the front desk here. Everybody else has theirs? I don't see anybody complaining.
Representative Craig does not have one.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you open to the to what's labeled as page 3, you'll see the items that I plan to discuss. Drilling activity, production and oil prices, gas capture and utilization, and that's because that pertains to the final item, which is fiscal impacts, and then also litigation that is ongoing. So to begin, let's talk about drilling. You can see pages 4 and 5. What you see on page 5 is a chart of our historical drilling rig count and how it pertains to North Dakota oil prices, or sweet oil price, and you can see that it follows it rather closely. We have 62 active drilling rigs, and in a minute we'll talk about where those are. But the main thing that I want to point out is that we've seen a huge increase in drilling efficiency. And many of you have heard this in our previous presentations, but the current average for drilling rigs is 2 wells per rig per month. I'm happy to report that I was in Denver week before last, and I met with about half of the CEOs of operators that work in North Dakota. We took a look at our top 30 oil and gas producers. About half of them are located in Denver, and the other half are located in Oklahoma or Texas. And so I try to sit down with them on a regular basis and get a sense of what their feelings are about the oil and gas industry moving forward. A couple of operators from Denver reported that they're now achieving 3 wells per rig per month. And so they have kind of consolidated their rig fleet to 4 or 5 very efficient rigs. And so they're now pushing, they're achieving a well from spud to TD in 8 to 10 days. And they also reported that they're now becoming more familiar with the fourth and fifth generation hydraulic fracturing technology, and they're seeing a 20 to 30% efficiency increase in frac crews. So in particular, these two companies were both operating 5 drilling rigs and 3 frac crews. They're going to go to 4 drilling rigs and 2 frac crews. All of that still achieving the same number of wells drilled and completed, but that's impacts workforce and that sort of thing. If we turn to pages 6 and 7, you can see where the 62 rigs are currently operating. This group of rigs expands and contracts depending on oil prices, and so you can see that currently they're still not far from what we call the core area of the Bakken, But based on the drilling statistics, this rig count of 62 is capable of drilling between 110 and 120 new wells every month. Your revenue forecast going forward is for 90. And so unless we see some significant change, and I'm not hearing that, we should be able to achieve the new well count of 90 per month that's built into the revenue forecast. Looking at page 7, just some status reports on active and inactive wells. I think a couple of things I want to point out there. Bakken and Three Forks were just shy of 14,000 wells producing from the Bakken and Three Forks. That puts us about one-third of the way through our most conservative drilling inventory. Our most conservative drilling inventory is based on no more than $60 per barrel West Texas Intermediate going forward and a 60 to 70 rig count, 20 years of drilling inventory. So we're about a third, we've worked our way through about one-third of that. I also need to point out the inactive and the waiting on completion wells. What I have to say is that in the month of June, the check engine light came on. So we saw significant deterioration in oil prices, and in visiting with the Denver companies, the venture capital companies told us that they're pretty much out of money, that the venture capitalists, the private venture capital, is not flowing to the E&P sector. And so they are going to struggle for the rest of this year for sure in terms of any additional drilling and completion activity. And also, talking with the publicly traded companies, Wall Street is not rewarding oil and gas E&P at this point. So their stock prices are low, and they are struggling. You see that in the inactive and waiting on completion numbers. And what I can tell you is, based on those prices, those 2 months that you see in there are not accurate. We just, in April, achieved the $50 per barrel for 90 days that would trigger inactive wells being put back on production. And we will not hit the $55 per barrel number, which will trigger non-completed wells being completed probably until October of this year at best. And so that's why I say the check engine light has come on. It's not flashing, but there are really caution signals in the industry in that Wall Street is not rewarding the publicly traded companies and the private venture capital is not flowing to the E&P sector. What private capital is flowing to the E&P sector is largely going to the Permian and almost all of that to Texas. And so there are a few things that you look, if you look a little further out, that could be to the benefit of North Dakota. Colorado has basically dismantled its oil and gas regulatory schema and is trying to rebuild it based on legislation that passed in the Colorado legislative session. And New Mexico has completely turned their regulatory system upside down. And so both of those were competitors for the Bakken, and both of those will slow considerably. But we don't know what that impact will be as we move forward. That's really everything I had to say about drilling. And Mr. Chairman, if it's all right, we'll move on. But there may be questions about the drilling activity and where the rigs are. And
does anybody have any questions at this point? Representative Delzer.
Mr. Chairman, Lynn, you mentioned Colorado and New Mexico. New Mexico is a pretty good share of the Permian. Colorado's got the Nairobi, I believe, and they totally redid their regulations?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Delzer, Colorado's the Niobrara and a major competitor of the Bakken for pipeline space as well as drilling activity and capital. What the state of Colorado did is completely change their oil and gas commission. They went from a 5-member commission that was largely industry-based to a 9-member commission with only one industry person on it. They also struck from their commission language the idea of promoting oil and gas production and preventing waste, and changed it to a commission that is focused on environmental and social impacts. So most of the counties, with the exception of Weld County in the state of Colorado, have put moratoriums on oil and gas drilling at this point. And so a large part of their drilling permit activity has been put on hold. Only one county in Colorado really is actively moving forward, and that's the county to the northeast of Denver. New Mexico changed its course with a new governor and new senators and new representatives, and they have implemented a great deal of very restrictive statutes, which are going to be translated into rules and regulations, will significantly slow the oil and gas activity in the Delaware Basin portion of the Permian.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Beckedahl first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lynn, is the Permian still drilling primary leases for holding leases right now, primary wells? And if they are, when that activity ends, as it did in the Bakken, are they going to see a slowdown in activity there? Because they're the giant that's going to continue to keep prices low in the U.S. if the status quo continues.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beckedahl, my answer to those questions would be yes and yes. For the next year, maybe 2 years, the Permian will still be doing their held-by-production drilling, which really is why the venture capital is flowing there, because they have enormous investments already in their leasehold. And then secondly, once that activity is completed, they're going to see the same kind of slowdown that the Bakken, the Eagle Ford, the Scoop and Stack, and even the Marcellus have seen. So I think we can anticipate during this biennium that they will complete that phase of their activity, and we'll begin to see the slowing in terms of rig counts and completion crews and that sort of thing. But the resource there is tremendous. It's absolutely enormous. So it will continue to be a competitor for the state of North Dakota.
Senator Sorbaugh.
Mr. Chairman, Lynn, I think that answered my question, because I was going to ask, is some of it related to transportation and all the other things of why the dollars are more positive there? I mean, you mentioned one thing, but, you know, whether it's taxes, transportation, pipelines, whatever, is that a factor also that the investment dollars would rather go down to Oklahoma, Texas?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sorbaugh, that is also a yes. The Permian has maxed out their transportation at this point as well. However, there are enormous numbers of pipelines that have been announced for moving Permian crude oil to the Gulf Coast for export. Not so much in North Dakota until just this week's announcement from Energy Transfer Partners that Dakota Access is planning to more than double their capacity. That's an enormous breath of fresh air to our oil and gas industry, in that we had already shifted approximately 300,000 barrels a day to rail, and I'll talk about some problems with the rail transportation at the end here or in a few minutes, but we had already shifted 300,000 barrels a day to rail, and all future growth was going to have to go on rail. We've since, within this last month, had two pipelines announced. The Liberty Pipeline, which will take North Dakota crude oil straight into Corpus Christi, Texas, and now the DAPL Pipeline expansion, which will go into Netherlands, Texas, for export. So I think we're now ahead of the Permian in terms of getting our oil transportation issues resolved. With natural gas, it's a whole different story. And the Permian is running into the same situation as North Dakota, where they're running up against their flaring limits. And that's going to begin to subdue some of their production growth. So transportation is an issue all around. But these two recent announcements here in the month of June are really good news for the state of North Dakota.
Any further questions up to this point? May continue, Lynn.
Yes. So if you want to move to pages 10 and 11, let's talk production, and then we'll talk price. Page 10. shows you our oil production in the state, and you can see that we're right at record levels. 1.4 million was the record that was set in December, and we're just 10,000 barrels a day shy of that in oil production. What I wanted to point out is the year-over-year increases. And so you can see that every year, with the exception of 12 and 13, when we were in that held-by-production drilling phase, every year we've seen 10 to 20% improvements in well productivity. And 2019 is not on this chart, but the 2019 well productivity is 30% better than 2018. And so the wells just continue to get better and better. You can see the top line, the red line, which is based on 90 completions per month, is our projection for oil production. The line underneath that is based on 65 completions per month, which would be a huge negative, and we don't see that kind of a price signal. Natural gas, a different story. That's on page 11. Again, you can see that with the exception of those 2 years, every year the wells produce 12 to 20% more natural gas. 2019, 50% more than 2018. So while the oil productivity of each well went up 30%, the natural gas productivity went up 50%. And this creates a big dilemma for us. So ultimately, we see in the mid-30s, 2 million barrels a day of oil production and almost 5.5 billion cubic feet a day of natural gas production. Hence the efforts to try to get some new type of natural gas utilization and industry here in the state. If we jump to pages 12 and 13, then we can talk pricing and production. What you see on page 12 is the revenue forecast as the green diamonds, and then I also put on there the North Dakota sweet historical price, the Energy Information Agency's projection for price, and West Texas Intermediate projection for price. What we see in North Dakota is at the wellhead, we realize the arithmetic average between North Dakota sweet and WTI. And you can see that that we did pretty well exceeding revenue forecasts until the month of June. The month of June, the blue dots, which is the actual realized wellhead price, lays right on top of the green diamond. Month to date, we are 3 cents per barrel above the revenue forecast. So really essentially not measurable, less than a nickel a barrel. So that's that price signal that I said we saw with the problems with the Chinese economy and exports and the concerns over Iran and OPEC meeting this month. We really dropped right on top of the revenue forecast. I'm happy to report that today it looks like we're about $4.90 positive to the revenue forecast as we look at today's price. So we've seen some significant recovery with the drone downing over the Gulf of Oman and some of those things. That price signal has moved up. But we are, as I said, the check engine light is on. When you move down to production, page 13, we are just 10,000 barrels a day above the revenue forecast. So you can see that the blue line, which is our projected production, and the revenue forecast are virtually right on top of each other. And however, going forward, we see a more positive picture for both price and forecast, but not really robust. I mean, this industry is kind of in a stable, steady as you go, struggling to get capital investment situation at this point.
Representative Nathy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lynn, and forgive me if you mentioned it, I missed it. What is the discount then with the new pipelines coming in? I'm imagining that's going to lessen the discount. But what's the discount as we speak today?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nathy. Today's discount is $5.91 per barrel off of WTI for North Dakota wellhead price. I think we built into the revenue forecast an $8 or $9 differential. So we're right on track there. We could see that shrink to $3 or $4 per barrel with the announcement from Dakota Access Pipeline bringing on additional pipeline capacity. That always grows when we have to go to rail. and shrinks when we have the big pipeline projects. But today's discount is $5.91. Moving to gas capture and utilization, and I'll try to move along, Mr. Chairman. On page 16, you see the gas capture goals. Our current goal is 88%. We all know that we're not achieving that. The chart on page 17 shows you why. All of the investments in gas gathering and gas processing are coming on stream in the third and fourth quarter of this year. And the one new announcement is scheduled to come on in the fourth quarter of next year, 2020. So we are coloring outside the lines right now. We have tried to accommodate this through North Dakota's gas capture policy. The good news is that with all of those new plants and gathering systems coming online, and with the exception of Little Missouri 4, they're all on track and on target. We anticipate, so the little plus signs represent the gas capture goals, and you can see that those remain in the green block through the third quarter of 2022. So I think by the end of this year, we're going to be inside the gas capture goals, and we should have about 3 years to plan the next $2 billion worth of investments. That green block there represents $2 billion invested in the state of North Dakota, plus $2 billion invested in a pipeline to take the natural gas liquids to Bushton, Kansas. So that's a huge amount of capital investment in the state of North Dakota. We're going to begin meeting with the midstream companies in July. So in July and August, we'll be meeting with those midstream companies. And maybe if I'm back in September, we can talk about what their plans are for that next layer that we need. As you can see, we're currently at just under 3 billion cubic feet a day, and we expect to almost double that to 5.5 billion by the middle of next day, or by the middle of the 2030s. So we should be back in compliance on gas capture the end of this year, and we should be able to hold that until third quarter or so of 2022. Pages 18 and 19 talk about litigation. We have two...
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Boucher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Helms, when we're looking at page 16, you indicated 88% is our goal, or NDIC's goal, based on policy. What is our actual capture flare rate at this time?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Boucher, it's 81%. So it's significantly, as I said, coloring outside the lines. And so we're really struggling to achieve the gas capture goals at this point. Third quarter, which I guess we'll be into next week, we should have a significant gas plant coming on that was supposed to come on in November of last year, the Little Missouri 4. And then there's a series of gas plants and the Elk Creek pipeline all coming on in the fourth quarter. So,
Senator Beckedahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lynn, relative to natural gas liquids and the pipelines and the movement of ethanes out of state, is there going to be an issue with not having enough ethane production left in the state for significant extra added value processing at some point? Or I know we're in this dilemma that the gas is too hot to put in the northern border system, and it's already at its maximums there, so we have to get rid of it. But my concern is we keep approving pipelines to export those products. At what point do we limit the capacity for us to get into value-added use of the ethane because we're shipping so much out of state?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Beckedahl, we don't see a problem with that at all. In fact, our export capacity, and we do have the Elk Creek pipeline coming on, and then an expansion of the Elk Creek pipeline, both of which will be full the day they're turned on. In fact, several of these gas plants, for example, Little Missouri 4 is going to have to come on in a phased manner simply because the NGL export capacity is not there. In doubling our gas production, we're also going to double our NGL production. And our export capacity will be chock-a-block full by 2025. There is nothing on the horizon to increase export capacity for ethane and natural gas liquids, so we could become constrained there. That opens the door for some of the things that you've heard discussed in the media, some of the ideas about petrochemical processing in the state of North Dakota. There will be abundant ethane and natural gas liquids for those folks to process. When we look at litigation, we have two major litigation efforts underway. The first one is Sorum et al. This concerns Senate Bill 2134 from the 2017 session. That's 6131 in the Century Code. The district court in Fargo found the vast majority of that statute to be constitutional, but they did find one portion, the retroactive application of payout of funds to the operators and the mineral owners, unconstitutional, 6131.104. The Industrial Commission is planning to appeal that decision to the Supreme Court. That appeal will be filed, I think the notice of appeal will be filed next week. We don't think that's the correct decision on 6133.104 in terms of those estimated funds. And so that will be appealed to the North Dakota Supreme Court. The second one is the state of Washington passed legislation which threatens to disrupt almost 200,000 barrels a day of Bakken crude oil that flows to Northwest Washington. It is the highest price market in the world right now, and so it would not only harm several great customers on the West Coast and be, we believe, environmentally detrimental, but it would harm North Dakota crude producers in that they would have to divert that 200,000 barrels a day to a lower profit market. It would have to flow into Cushing, Oklahoma, or someplace like that, where the netback is considerably lower. And so initially the Industrial Commission is working with an attorney in Washington, D.C., and the federal agency, PHMSA, who believes that their authority preempts this action by the state of Washington, and we're anticipating that PHMSA will file a federal preemption, which will block this Washington statute from taking effect. But in both cases, thank you for the funding. We're having to pursue litigation to defend the actions of the North Dakota Legislature and the North Dakota Industrial Commission. And then finally, the final part of my report, Mr. Chairman, was to provide on a biennial basis under North Dakota Century Code 541742 the impacts of any actions that the industrial policies or orders that the Industrial Commission has taken that could impact state revenues by $20 million or more. So I've identified, so on page 21 you can see the table that we use. We look at it three ways. We could get involved or take some action that impacted jobs to the point where the job count and therefore the income tax affected state revenues. We could affect sales tax by reducing the number of wells or increasing the number of wells being drilled. And we can also have an impact on gross production tax and oil extraction tax. So you can see that two major policy changes made this biennium, gas capture and oil conditioning. And on the gas capture side, we don't believe there was any impact to jobs. However, the relief that we offered to the industry to get through this time of inadequate infrastructure has resulted, we believe, in 67 additional wells being completed and about 3 million additional barrels of oil being produced and paying extraction and production tax. It did result in less natural gas gross production tax, so that's netted out of here. But the overall impact to state revenues is a positive $26.5 million. So that one did have a $20 million plus impact on the positive side. And then looking at oil conditioning, looking at 3.5 years of oil conditioning statistics and some 60,000 data points, we relaxed the amount of data that was being collected and filed with the Industrial Commission during the summer months, when our data showed that oil conditioning was not an issue. Our best estimate is no impact on additional wells or additional production, but maybe a dozen less people out there doing vapor pressure tests. And so a potential, you know, $27,000 negative impact on income tax revenues. Mr. Chairman, that's my report, and I'd be happy to take any additional questions.
Okay, any last questions? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lynn, in your overview last winter, you talked about the opportunity for our North Dakota Bakken oil to possibly reach the Pacific Northwest for a marine fleet low sulfur requirement. What's the status of that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Nelson, currently the worldwide marine fleet is still on target for June of next year to have to shift to low sulfur crude oil as a fuel. And that is part of why the Energy Information Agency has a significantly more robust oil price forecast than what you see for West Texas Intermediate on the NYMEX or even for our revenue forecast. And so you can see that they're building that in to their forecast. It is still a significant upside for our crude oil markets. The ability to move our crude oil to the Gulf Coast is going to really improve that, because those are the refineries that will be shifting from high sulfur crude oil sources to low sulfur crude oil. So again, the announcement of DAPL and Liberty Pipelines are really important in terms of Bakken crude moving to that marine fuel market.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I could continue. Maybe I misunderstood in the overview, but I thought that we had a transportation advantage if it, in the Pacific Northwest, if it would go there. Now, I'm assuming that the decision that the Washington State Legislature made regarding rail transportation would affect that if that was allowed to stay. But do we have any other options for transportation to that market if we don't have that rail potential?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, you're exactly right. And I did talk about the fact that the West Coast refineries, in particular in Northwest Washington, had plans to expand their sweet crude processing to provide the low sulfur marine fuels to the Pacific fleet. The Washington legislation really put a halt to that. They are limited to increasing their sweet crude input by no more than 10%. And so, yeah, we've shifted our focus to serving that market through the Gulf Coast. And I talked about, you know, the Northwest is the best price. There is no question. It's the highest price in the world. And so it is harmful to us, and that's why we're going to be aggressive in combating the Washington legislation. But the Washington legislation, unless it is preempted by the federal government or by the courts, will close the door to that opportunity for Bakken crude oil. And we have no other way to put Bakken crude oil on the West Coast. There is no pipelines. There is no other route to the West Coast beyond rail.
Senator Hogue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Helms, do you know if the PHMSA claim, is there an effort to get a temporary restraining order to enjoin that until the outcome of the litigation?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hogue, absolutely. The attorney that we're working with in Washington, D.C. says that they believe, the law firm, that the federal preemption should be accompanied by an injunction to try to block the implementation of the Washington legislation. And so those will be moving together. It's fully anticipated that the state of Washington, with their governor running for president, that they will litigate the PHMSA preemption claim. And so a major part of that will be to seek the injunction. Thank you.
Okay, any further questions of Mr. Helms before he steps down? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Lynn. Okay, with that, we'll move into the agenda item regarding the committee consideration of state agency requests that were authorized by the Emergency Commission. We have Mr. Morissette to present them, and I might say that these three items, we will vote collectively unless there is a request to vote independently or have discussion on any independently. Representative Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am going to request that the Council of the Arts item be voted on separately.
Okay. We will honor that request.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, I have three requests to present to you today. The first one that was approved by the Emergency Commission and requires budget section approval is from the Office of the State Tax Commissioner. It is for an additional $300,000 that would come from the state contingency appropriation to fund anticipated county claims related to the homestead tax credit or disabled veterans credit program. Those programs were both increased through deficiency appropriations during the 2019 legislative session, as that's kind of a moving target and those amounts aren't known until after you're gone and those requests come to the tax commissioner's office in May. So at this point, as they're seeing those requests come in and be higher than what was anticipated, they're asking for an additional $300,000 from the state contingency appropriation. For your information, that would leave about $32,000 left in that contingency appropriation that would be unspent at the end of the biennium. Mr. Chairman, the second request is from the Office of the Adjutant General, and it is the request that is similar to the ones you've seen at all your previous meetings over the last couple of years, where it is a request to spend monies that have been appropriated to pay disaster claims from the State Disaster Relief Fund. In this case, it's a request to spend $494,915. About $436,000 of that is for assistance payments, primarily to tribes or political subdivisions, and about $59,000 is for hazard mitigation payments. And Mr. Chairman, I can move on to the final one if you'd like.
Mr. Morris said, I think what we'll do is have discussion on these two issues and then take a vote on those two, and we'll have a separate discussion with the third request. So are there any questions of Mr. Morissette on the first two requests before you? Seeing none, I'd ask Brady take the roll call on. Oh, excuse me, we need the motion first. Okay, there's a motion by Representative Kaepernick, seconded by Senator Robinson. Any discussion? I'll ask Brady to call the roll.
Senators Wanzek.
Yes.
Beckedahl.
Aye.
Dever.
Yes.
Erbely. Grabinger. Yes. Heckeman.
Yes.
Hoag.
Yes.
Holmberg. Klein. Krebsbach. Lee.
Aye.
Mathern.
Aye.
Elke. Pullman.
Aye.
Robinson.
Aye.
Sorvog.
Aye.
Wardner.
Aye.
Representatives Anderson.
Yes.
Beadle.
Yes.
Ballou.
Yes.
Bow. Boucher.
Yes.
Brandenburg. Delzer. Hansen.
Yes.
Holman. Howe.
Yes.
Kempenick.
Yes.
Clemine.
Yes.
Kreit.
Yes.
Lauser.
Yes.
Martinson.
Yes.
Meyer.
Yes.
Mock.
Yes.
Munson. Nathy.
Yes.
Nelson.
Yes.
Pollard. Sanford.
Yes.
Schatz. Schmidt.
Yes.
Schobinger.
Aye.
And Vigasa.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, the motion carries.
Okay, the motion carries. We'll move on to the next request item and have Joe explain it.
Mr. Chairman, the final emergency commission request for your consideration today is from the Council on the Arts. It's request number 1941. It is a request for the 2019-21 biennium, and it is to transfer $10,000 from their appropriated grants line to their salaries line in order to fund a temporary employee and increase the hours that temporary employee works. Normally, the requests that come before you are the ones that meet the threshold of $50,000 or more. In this case, because this is $10,000, you might wonder why that was before you, and it is because of a different statutory requirement that provides that any transfer that would eliminate a program needs to come before the budget section, and in this case, the funding in the grants line is coming from the Poet Laureate grant program, and it would be the entire $10,000, so it would eliminate that grant program, and that's the reason that it's before you today for your consideration.
Okay, Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm really against this request, and I'll tell you why. This is something that really definitely should be proceeded forward in the legislative process. It should not be done in this way. I think this is a slippery slope, and I think that right now this is definitely something we shouldn't be doing.
Representative Belzer.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, I too believe this is not something that should happen. You know, you take a look at it, we would be changing what the whole legislature voted on less than 2 months ago, or about 2 months ago. And we would be changing that. I've been on the budget section since 1997, and I don't believe I've ever seen a request come in to change the next time's budget in the first meeting after the legislature adjourned. If we did this, I think in 2 years we could look at almost every agency that did not like what they got from the legislature coming in and trying to do this. This is wrong. It's as wrong as you can get. I certainly hope that we do not support this proposal.
Representative Craig.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree wholeheartedly what Representative Belzer said. This budget is in our section of appropriations, and we just, you know, finish that budget up there. They seemed at that point to be happy with the 20 hours. Now we're looking at adding another 5 hours. If they needed that person at that time, they should have brought that forward. They didn't. So I would hope that we would not honor this request. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Mather.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm wondering, are you going to ask the director of that agency to explain this?
Well, I know both the director of the agency and the Poet Laureate are here, and I'm trying to decide whether we want to get into a deep discussion here. If your wishes are to hear her explanation, I would entertain that, but I would ask him to keep it short. To stay in.
I would like to hear from the director of the agency.
Okay, I know she's in the room.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Blue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I don't think we should hear from the director because we're not in the middle of a hearing here. This is an emergency commission action, and we're either to approve it or disapprove it.
Well, as chairman, I tend to agree with that, but I'm going to rule that she will give her a minute to explain her rationale or reasoning for this. But I would ask her that she keeps it to the point of why you need the dollars, and let's not get into a lengthy debate.
So, Mr. Chairman, are you going to allow any other public testimony as well if you're going to have a hearing on this? I agree. I don't think we should be doing this.
Just a second. Okay, I'm going to rule that there was a request for a question.
we'll keep it at that. If there's any questions of Madam Konakow, if you want to come forward, and Senator Mathern, if you had a question.
Mr. Chairman and senators and representatives, thank you for having me up here.
Okay, Senator Mathern, if you had a question you want to ask it.
I guess my question is, was the issue here that's being addressed brought to the section of the Appropriations Committees during the session? And is your request here consistent with what you were recommending during the appropriation sections?
Chairman and Senator Mathern, yes, it was. This was actually part of my testimony in both the Senate and the House, and I can't actually tell you what happened. We were granted additional monies for an increase to our administrative assistant, our temporary administrative assistant, and that would have been for about $7,800. And what didn't happen were the two associated requests, which is why we ended up at the Emergency Commission last week and then before you today. I can only say that I think there was an overload, and there were two items that were completely overlooked. And so when we heard at the end that we had gotten that slight increase, we recognized that we would have to come back to actually reach the 20 hours that had been recommended.
Are there any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions of the committee that they would like to ask?
Well, Mr. Chairman, not a question, but I would have another statement if I could.
Certainly. Go ahead, Representative Delsman.
Well, you know, you take a look at, this wasn't overlooked. This was discussed, it was talked about in the committees. And this was the compromise that came out that had the whole legislature vote on it. And now we're talking about taking the opportunity to change what the whole legislature did with, what, a third of us? This is directly against what we did in 2055. If you look at 2055, and that doesn't even take effect yet, but I don't believe this request would even fit under 2055. So again, I sure hope we do not support this.
Okay, as chairman, if there's no further discussion, I need a motion either for a do pass or do not pass. Representative Martinson.
I move we do not pass.
Okay, we got a motion for a do not pass as our second.
Second.
Second by Meyer. Any discussion on that motion? Any discussion? Seeing none, I'll have Brady call the roll.
Representatives Anderson.
Yes.
Beadle.
Yes.
Ballou.
Yes.
Boe. Boucher.
Yes.
Brandenburg. Delzer.
Yes.
Hansen.
Yes.
Holman. Howe.
Yes.
Kempenick.
Yes.
Clemine.
Yes.
Kreit.
Yes.
Lauser. Martinson.
Yes.
Meyer.
Yes.
Mock.
Yes.
Munson. Nathy.
Yes.
Nelson. Pollard, Sanford, Schatz, Schmidt, Schobinger, Vigasa, Senators Wanzek, Becadal, Dever, Erbely, Grabinger, Heckeman, Hoag, Holmberg, Klein, Krebsbach, Lee, Mathern, Elke, Pullman, Robinson, Sorvag.
Aye.
Wardner.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, the motion carries.
Okay, that motion carries, and the request fails. Okay, next item agenda is report of the Legacy and Budget Stabilization Fund Advisory Board. Representative Kepnick.
Mr. Chairman, members of the budget section, this morning we had meet our requirement. We had a meeting of the Legacy Budget Stabilization Fund. Basically, what we did is we used, we had a March 20th meeting, and we used basically that format, and we upgraded some of the numbers. Basically, we talked, OMB Director Joe Morris had brought most of the information that how this is going to work. It's approximately $454 million is going to get transferred into this from the earnings. Basically, what went on, and there was a discussion earlier about how, and that's what, it gets a little complicated in one thing, but they're using May numbers. It's kind of like the oil. They're using May numbers, basically 24 or 23 months of data to come up with the transfer number, and then as it goes forward, we'll be, since it's this is the first time this has happened, they'll, and then subsequently it'll be 24 months is how this will work out. But approximately $454 million. We're going to the budget stabilization fund is growing a lot faster than what was anticipated too, and so I've the committee, we talked about right now we're earning about 3%, and this last year was a good year on short fixed income type earnings, and we're looking into a little more on how to use that to leverage that larger number in the budget stabilization fund to help with the earnings and stuff on that. So that's one of the directives we had. There's approximately $6.5 billion in the fund itself, and like I said, they've started holding back monies and to transfer into the general fund, and then as it goes on, the 65, of course, is 65 million of ending fund balance, so the balance will either go into what's been allocated, the 300 million, or the, and then plus the 154 over that. So there's only one other thing that we learned this morning, that they do have a watch on one of our investment managers. LSV is the name on it, and is a company, and there it's just the earnings are dropped and on that one manager, and so it was brought up that there is a watch on one manager on it, and this is something that we've looked at. I mean, not everything goes up, and so that's been one of the things that we're gonna probably, as markets change, we'll probably be looking at where some of the managers are, but we've structured the fund so that our potentials are still there on this, but it's just one thing that was brought up. Over the five-year average, we've actually been running over about 6.7% on the five-year, and if you take the, or 5.56% on the five-year, and on the three-year, 7.72 is what the returns have been on this fund. Otherwise, it's been, like I said, this will be the first time we're doing the earnings transfers, and that's where we're at with this, and if there's any questions, I'll try to answer them.
Are there any questions of, excuse me, Representative Kepnick?
Thank you, Representative Kippen. Okay, next item on the agenda is a presentation from the Board of University and School Lands regarding state agencies not submitting a claim for unclaimed property and those agencies' consideration of the relinquishment of agencies' rights to recover that unclaimed property.
Chairman Wanzek and members of the Budget Section Committee, for the record, my name is Jody Smith, Commissioner of the Board of University and School Lands. I'm here today on behalf of the Department to provide a list of state agency unclaimed property that may be released from claim eligibility in accordance with North Dakota Century Code Section 47-30.1-24.1. In accordance with the statute, the Unclaimed Property Division completed a certified mailing to the state agency property holders in June of 2018. The objective of today's appearance is, one, to present a report listing the property held in the names of the agencies which successfully claimed their property and those that did not complete the claim process, and two, to respectfully request the budget section designate the unclaimed property ineligible for claim by the respective state agencies, and with the agencies relinquishing any right to recover the property and provide approval for transferring the property to the Common Schools Trust Fund. In the 2017 mailing, there were a total of 15 entities. Seven of them responded, eight of them did not. There was only $885 claimed. The amount we're requesting today to be relinquished is $10,171.21. I look forward to working with this committee and would be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, are there any questions of Ms. Smith? Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have Job Service reporting on the Insurance Trust Fund balance. Oh, I'm sorry, we need a motion on that last report. Motion made by Senator Robinson, second?
Mock.
Representative Mock. Brady will call the roll.
Senators Wanzek.
Yes.
Bekaedahl.
Aye.
Dever.
Aye.
Herbele. Grabinger.
Yes.
Heckeman.
Yes.
Hoag.
Yes.
Holmberg. Klein. Krebsbach.
Aye.
Lee.
Aye.
Mather.
Aye.
Elke.
Aye.
Poolman.
Aye.
Robinson.
Aye.
Sorvag.
Aye.
Wardner.
Aye.
Representatives Vigasa.
Yes.
Anderson.
Yes.
Beadle.
Yes.
Ballou.
Yes.
Bow. Boucher.
Yes.
Brandenburg. Delzer.
Yes.
Hansen.
Yes.
Holman. Howe.
Yes.
Kempenick.
Yes.
Clemine.
Yes.
Kreit.
Yes.
Lauser. Martinson.
Yes.
Meyer.
Yes.
Mock.
Yes.
Munson. Nathie.
Yes.
Nelson.
Yes.
Pollard. Sanford.
Yes.
Schatz.
Yes.
Schmidt.
Yes.
Schobinger.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, the motion carries.
Okay, that motion carries. Now we'll go into the Job Service report.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Darren Brostrom, the Deputy Director of Job Service, and I'm here to provide you a very brief update as to the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund balance. I'm happy to report that the fund is strong and it's on target. The balance as of December 31st, 2018 was $187 million with a target of $182 million. The multiplier was 1.03 with our target multiplier of 1.0. That's really the update that I have for you. It's a strong trust fund at this point, and happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Any questions of Darren? Seeing none, thank you, Darren. With that, we have gone through our agenda. We met our responsibilities for today. If there's any discussion or any directives at this time, as chair, I'd be willing to entertain them. If not, I hope everybody has a fantastic summer. I know for me it's been a busy summer. It's going to continue to be a busy summer. I've got two family reunions and a number of activities going on in July, so, but hope everybody has a great summer, and we'll see you at the next budget section meeting. With that, we'll adjourn the meeting.